This is KUT. Governor Greg Abbott wants to amend the U.S. Constitution. He's called for a convention of states to consider amendments, including things like requiring the federal government to have a balanced budget or allowing two-thirds of states to overrule a Supreme Court decision. But it's been a long time since the Constitution was amended, and it doesn't happen very often anyway. KUT's Matt Largie has the story of the last time it was, and this tale begins right here in Austin.
This is a story about how one regular person,
one extremely dedicated, extremely vocal, energetic person,
can move the machinery of government by sheer force of will. That person was this guy, Gregory Watson, and it all started back in the spring of 1982.
I was taking a class here at the University of Texas. It was a government class, and the professor's name was Sharon Waite.
I'm Sharon Waite.
And she gave us an assignment of write a paper about a governmental process.
Oh, yes. You were to write an essay. And since I had concentrated on the Constitution and the amendments, many students chose to write on the Constitution and the amendments.
Before we go any further, I want to take a second to do some remedial civics. You've probably heard of the Constitution. It's been in the news a little bit lately. It's the foundational document of this country, so it's kind of important. And it's really hard to change it. You have to get two-thirds of Congress to approve an amendment, and then you need three-quarters of state legislatures to ratify it, 38 states in all. So it's really hard, and that's by design.
Yes, yes. The founders saw this as higher law.
That's Zach Elkins. He's a professor at UT Austin, and he turned me on to this story.
And so in some sense should be beyond the reach of majorities, and certainly a majority in the legislature. It makes sense for higher law. You want something a little more stable.
Remember, since it was approved in 1789, there have been 27 amendments. 10 of those happened right away. That's the Bill of Rights, freedom of speech, right to bear arms, etc. Since then, there have been 17 more amendments. They're generally pretty big ones. Abolishing slavery, prohibition, giving women the right to vote, repealing prohibition, big. And there are many, many more that get proposed that never go anywhere.
So if you look through these, it's interesting. You can see in some ways where the Constitution doesn't quite fit what people want for their society and politics, but yet none of these things ever come to fruition.
Which brings us back to Gregory Watson, trying to figure out what he's going to write that paper on.
So I'm at the library down on 8th and Guadalupe, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. I pull out a book that has within it a chapter of amendments that Congress has sent to the state legislatures, but which not enough state legislatures approved in order to become part of the Constitution. And this one just jumped right out at me. It said, no law.
Varying the compensation.
Varying the compensation for the services.
The services of the senators and representatives.
Of the senators and representatives
shall take effect
until an election of representatives shall have intervened.
And so, in layman's terms, what does that mean?
It essentially prevents legislators from giving themselves a pay raise.
At least the raise can't take effect until after the next election.
I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. I see great logic in that.
The thing is, this amendment was written in 1789, almost 200 years earlier, by James Madison, one of the founding fathers. It was supposed to be one of the very first amendments to the Constitution. It didn't get passed by enough states. But here's the thing. It didn't have a deadline, so technically it could still be ratified. Gregory was intrigued, so he got to work.
It was back in the days when you had maybe, if you were lucky, you had an IBM Selectric typewriter. And I did have an IBM Selectric typewriter, and I had a few different typeface balls that those typewriters use. And I remember being so cautious about everything, I would take out the normal ball, then put in the italic ball for a court case, and then take the italic ball out, put the normal one back in, and did all this wonderful work and turn it into the TA and get it back with a great big C on it. So I appealed it to the professor.
Well, he came up and he said, I wrote this paper and I don't think I deserve a C. I think it's much better than that. And I kind of glanced at it, but I really didn't see anything that was particularly outstanding about it. And I thought a C was probably fine.
She came back the following class period and literally flung it at me and said, no change.
So I said, there it is. See, it is. And left it at that.
You know, most people would have just taken the grade at that point and left it at that. But Gregory is not most people.
So I thought right then and there, I'm going to get that thing ratified.
The amendment had been passed by 9 states already, most way back in the 1790s. But Gregory needed 38. He needed to get 29 more states to pass it. And when he told people about his plan, the reaction was generally not positive.
The very, very, very initial reaction from like guys in the dorm room and stuff like that was laughter and dismissiveness and it'll never happen.
And in a way, that was motivating. So he started looking for members of Congress who might be sympathetic to the idea of limiting their own ability to give themselves a pay raise.
I started asking them, who back home in the state legislature of your home state do you think might be willing to introduce a resolution to resurrect this amendment from the year 1789 that I stumbled upon by accident?
There were plenty of rejections, but mostly he'd just hear nothing back at all. But finally, he did get something. A senator from Maine said he'd pass it on to someone in his state. That person passed it on to someone else who introduced the amendment in the Maine legislature.
And in their 1983 session, they passed it. And in the summer of that year, June, I get a nice big envelope with a parchment copy of it. So I'm thinking, my first success story. This can actually be done.
So Gregory got out that old IBM Selectric typewriter and started writing to every state lawmaker he could find. And it worked.
The next year was 1984, and I was able to get Colorado to pass it. 5 ratifications in 1985, 3 more in 1986. 87 was a good year. We got Connecticut, we got Montana, we got Wisconsin. I've got Georgia, I've got Louisiana. A big explosion of 7 in 1989. Then it slowed down to only 2 in 1990, only 1 in 1991. But at that point, it was getting very, very close. And I am literally sending a letter to every member of the legislature.
After 10 years of letter writing, sweet talking, and shaming, 35 states had ratified the amendment.
So 1992 rolls around, and I'm thinking, 3 more states, that's all I need.
Alabama and Missouri both passed it on May 5th, 1992. On May 7th, Gregory was on the phone, listening to the Michigan House of Representatives as they voted on the amendment. This was it, the last state.
At that time, I knew that the amendment had been ratified within seconds of it happening.
After 10 years, his quest was finally over. More than 200 years after it was proposed, the 27th Amendment was finally ratified.
I did treat myself to a nice dinner at an expensive restaurant.
Now, here's the thing that really strikes me about what Gregory did. People talk about amending the Constitution all the time, but it's incredibly rare because it's a really hard thing to do. But here's a guy, a kid really, who actually did it. This happened in 1992, and it's still the most recent amendment to the Constitution.
I wanted to demonstrate that one extremely dedicated, extremely vocal, energetic person could push this through. And I think I demonstrated that.
In some ways, his story is very much an Austin story.
That's Zach Elkins from UT again.
You'd expect people wandering the streets talking about their grand project for changing the country. And here's Greg Watson, who is not just wandering the streets muttering about the 27th Amendment. He actually got it passed.
Since all this happened, Gregory's been a state legislative aide and a city council aide in Austin, but he's kept pursuing these kinds of projects. In 1995, he got Mississippi to post-ratify the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery. It was symbolic, but it meant something. And then there's the little stuff, a little less grand than amending the Constitution. Lately, his project has been getting the city to put up street signs at intersections that don't have them.
They don't want to put a sign at Andrew Zilker and Columbus Drive. but I'll keep pestering them. And finally, they will.
Meantime, as Gregory celebrated his achievement, things weren't going so well for his old professor, Sharon Waite. Of course, she had no idea what Gregory had done. She'd moved back to South Texas in the 10 years since he was her student. When she got there, she tried to get a teaching job at the university nearby. No luck.
Which is fine. That just happened that way. But at any rate, I was feeling sorry I'd spent all those years studying and, you know, nothing.
She'd look at all the notebooks and papers and stuff she'd collected over the years, getting her master's and her PhD, all these ideas and thoughts and knowledge. And she wondered, what was it all for? Until one day.
One day, the phone rings. This is about 1991 or 92.
It was 92, a little while after the 27th Amendment was ratified. The caller asked for her by name.
They said, well, did you teach at UT Austin in the early 80s? And I said, yes, I did. They said, well, this is a professor from the Naval Academy, and I'm writing a book on constitutional amendments. Did you know that one of your students, Gregory Watson, pursued getting this constitutional amendment passed because you gave him a bad grade?
Sharon was blown away, and in that moment, she felt redeemed.
Many people have always said, you never know what kind of effect you're going to have on other people and on the world, that you'll never know a lot of the things that you have affected in your life. And this is when it really hit me, because I thought to myself, you have just, by making this fellow a grade he didn't like, affected the U.S. Constitution more than any of your fellow professors ever thought about doing. And how ironic is that?
And with the benefit of hindsight, Sharon says, he clearly doesn't deserve that C she gave him.
Goodness, he certainly proved he knew how to work the Constitution and what it meant and how to be politically active. So yes, I think he deserves an A after that effort. A plus!
And actually, that's exactly what's happened. On March 1st, Sharon signed a form to officially change Gregory's grade. It still has to be stamped by some people at UT. But when it is, 35 years after he wrote that paper, he'll finally turn that C into an A. Matt Largy, KUT News.